Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps and another roundtable discussion, ladies and gentlemen. This time, we're all about potash. And some of you might say, what is potash? Well, potash is used to help farmers fertilize their crops. And in these day and age, we all need food. And from what I understand, and I'm not an expert, that's why I've got three people that know a lot more about potash than I do on the call with me today. And we're going to talk about the fact, what is potash? What is it used for? Why it's important? And also, as investors, what's the size of the market and what are the demands of the market? So three people much more qualified than I am are with us today. And let me introduce you. Colin Randall is the managing editor of the Australian Potash and Phosphate Report. He's also the executive director marketing for the Chatham Rock Phosphate. Joining me as well is Karen Patterson. She is the managing director of Trigg Mining with a very large phosphate project over in Western Australia.
Potash.
Sorry, potash, not phosphate, potash. Thanks, Karen. See, this is what I like about roundtables, because you can always interrupt me and go, no, you got it wrong, Kez, again. Anyway, Colin's in lockdown, Karen's not. And the ASX code for Trigg Mining, Karen, is?
EMG.
EMG, there we go. Finally joining us as well is Dr. Chris Gilchrist. It is early morning in Ireland for Dr. Gilchrist. He's the managing director of the South Haas Potash, and that is Western Europe's most significant potash resource. Let's start with you, Colin. Given the fact that you're managing editor of the report, and for those that don't know what is potash and why it's important, can you just give us a brief overview of that?
Okay, well, simply put, to grow anything, you need three components. You need nitrogen, N, you need phosphorus, P, and you need potassium, K. So the K can come from two forms of potash. There is muriate of potash, which is the potassium chloride, or there is sulfate of potash, which is potassium sulfate. Now, what's important is that there's some crops like potatoes and fruits and nuts and vegetables that are not tolerant to, they can't stand chloride-based. So potassium sulfate is the preferred and probably in some places the only way that you can actually provide potassium into the fertilizer. So that's why it's very important. And it's also just by proportion, and I won't give the numbers, but if you imagine the potassium market 100%, sulfate of potassium is probably 5%. So it's quite small in world terms. So if you look at the normal way that they produce muriate of potash, it's normally done by either underground mining or solution mining. So South Harts has got a deposit of muriate of potash, and maybe Chris will talk about how they're going to mine it. But Australia, for its part, has no potash at all. So it was only and it was really the discovery that the brines in the huge salt lakes in Western Australia and part of Northern Territory that had sulfate of potassium. And so let's call it SOP. So to produce SOP, there's a couple of ways you can do it. There's either a very complicated chemical process, or you use the sun and a very simple process after. And I'm sure Karen will pick me up. I'm just a basically, I'm a dumb mining engineer who's learning an awful lot about. I learned a lot about phosphate, and I'm in trying to write intelligently, or rather, aggregate intelligently the information on potash. I learn every week, and so I've been following very much both South Arts and its trip from being Davenport before, and for Trigg, I've followed them in the work that they've done on Lake Throssell, and recently the announcement that that they've listed their first JORC resource. And when you think some of these places to actually do the exploration, you're actually on a salt pan or a salt thing. And if you don't have the right gear, you can sink an awful long way in. So it's pretty interesting. And there currently, there are 9 Australian companies who are actively working. Well, let's put it this way: there's 9 companies that say they're actively working on SOP, and there's probably really only about 6 who have really pushed out there. And on MOP,
I think it's important to note that China, and correct me if I'm wrong, to my panelists, China is currently the largest SOP producer globally. So I guess what we're doing here in Australia, but and also you, Chris, in Germany, looking at Europe having its own supply, and we in Australia having our own supply, because especially I guess during COVID, when you do have some logistical challenges with international markets and transport, having your own source of supply is going to become ever more important, I would have thought. And I'm happy for any of you to comment on that. Karen?
Yeah, the only difficulty there, in my opinion, Kerry, is the Australian market's about 80 to 100,000 tons in size. So if, say, 6 or at most 9 producers actually start to produce potash, they're going to have to carve up a very small market, which obviously means that these producers are going to have to export. And they'll be exporting against very aggressive low-cost producers in China, in Southeast Asia. So what concerns me is that the SOP from Australia, apart from providing the domestic market in Australia, where prices will be pretty good, is that the SOP will have to be exported at some financial cost. And also what's becoming more important nowadays is the environmental cost associated, the carbon footprint, basically, associated with exporting potash over long distances. So that's going to be interesting. As we've heard already, the global potash market or the global SOP market is somewhere between 5 and 6 million tons against a 72 million ton MOP market. Therefore, it's going to be very competitive, and it'll be interesting to see how large producers, for example, the million ton per annum program put out by Danakali in Eritrea, how they're going to squeeze 1 million tons of SOP into a 5 million ton market without upsetting the price of SOP. So the dynamics of the SOP market will be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how the price holds up if newcomers come into play without having to discount their SOP in order to sweep into the marketplace.
Do you think that the SOP market will increase in size because it's a higher quality and has less of environmental footprint, Chris? Do you think that that's a possibility? And therefore...
Not if it remains more expensive. And there's absolutely no prospect at this time of the SOP market replacing the MOP market because of size. If you look at the SOP projects that are on the table at the moment, you've got obviously the 6 to 9 projects in Australia. You've got Danakali. There might be some other projects like Sirkum and Yara in the Danakil Depression in northern Ethiopia. But together, they might be able to scrape around 8 million tons of SOP per annum. So that's never going to challenge the MOP market. No, the MOP is a more than adequate fertilizer, although it's chloride based. It's in places like Northern Europe and Brazil, where there's high levels of rainfall, that poisoning chloride is washed continuously from the soil and therefore doesn't build up to dangerous levels. There's actually some crops that even enjoy chlorides, like in Europe, they grow a lot of sugar beet, and sugar beet actually enjoys chloride. And in fact, potash is put onto sugar beet as a crushed sylvanite. It's not even processed to make pure K60 potash. It's put on as a crushed hard rock. So, you know, you have to, it's very market specific as such.
Do you see, Chris, do you see China, in fact, I'll open this up to any of you, do you see China continuing to be the largest SOP producer, or do you think that there's going to be some challenge, especially, Karen, I guess, with you bringing on your project in Western Australia? Do you think that's going to challenge the Chinese market a little bit?
Well, China, as you rightly pointed out, is the largest producer of sulphate of potash. They have the largest salt lake out of anyone in any country. It is massive and very high production rates, but they also consume a huge amount of sulphate of potash for their food because it's essential for all the leafy green vegetables, like our fruit and vegetables, cannot tolerate muriate of potash. Muriate of potash is great in cereals where you do have reliable rainfall that can, and you can tolerate this, the chloride, so the salt going into the river system. But in places where you have intensive agriculture, you've got arid soils, you've got unreliable rainfall, and even in acidic soils as well, the chloride makes acidic soils even more acidic, which then obviously changes the microorganism structure of the soils. And that's incredibly important for the good yield rates that farmers are looking for agricultural output. So there is really a need for sulphate of potash globally. What I've witnessed is that limitation on that, the market is limitation on supply because there are not many of these salt lake environments. So you need both the geology to have the source rocks there, and then you need this climate where you do have rainfall coming down through these systems for a long period of time, dissolving the minerals, and then the high evaporation rates to concentrate the mineral endowment in these salt lake systems. So there really aren't very many natural sources of it globally. So a big proportion of the sulphate of potash market is made up by the Mannheim process, which is a chemical process where they bimuriate, they then find some sulfuric acid somewhere and put that into a furnace, heat it, pressurise it, consume a huge amount of energy to manufacture sulphate of potash just to meet current demand. And with that, there is this byproduct of hydrochloric acid, which is extremely corrosive. It can't be stored, and there's not a great market for hydrochloric acid. So it really is quite taxing on the environment to manufacture all this sulphate of potash that we need for those high nutrient crops. All of like our almond crops, the avocado crops, the coffee beans, all of those things need sulphate of potash to grow. So I can only see more and more consumption of those things on my horizon, and I can only see more and more demand for an Australian natural source of sulphate of potash for our food production.
Are you saying that the China production is not naturally produced? I mean,
there is a large proportion, so that the big salt lake does produce a natural product, and majority of that is consumed within China, and then they also produce more sulphate of potash using the Mannheim process. So it is a big market because it is a big population and a big food market.
So do you see that your product, when it does get into production, will be supplying China? Or are you just supplying Australia, or a bit of both?
Bit of everything. And I don't think it's all about China in this case. Some of the peers that we've talked about looking at developing or currently in construction for their projects have got offtake arrangements with Chinese fertiliser companies. But they're quite diverse in the offtakes here in Australia. So we've like the peers have got agreements with the European companies, Northeast Asia. There's a very large population in Southeast Asia. So I think there is a lot of opportunity to not only keep the product in Australia, because that's my passion. Trig mining is about Australia, an Australian product, and I would love to keep as much of it here for our agricultural output as we possibly can. And where our project is positioned, I'm aiming to target both the Western Australian and the East Coast agricultural markets with our product. But it is about exporting and global security, global food supply.
I was going to make the point that the Australian government has just trumpeted, quite frankly, quite rightly, an initiative called the Supply Chain Resilience Initiative. And specifically, they identified three areas: medicine, crop protection, which was sprays, and then fertilizer. Because with Australia being 65% of many of our fertiliser requirements are coming from China. So we've seen disruption in our exports to China as a reaction to perceived slights. So there is, and we know that China has already announced reductions in exports of fertiliser. So I think, in fact, that the world is going to change a bit. And I suppose, Chris, I'd make the point that, the Australians are a bit aggressive, let's be honest. Their intention you might have a nicely ordered system, but there's an ability to actually get in and disturb it. And I always think about Twiggy Forest. Everyone said that iron ore had to be 65% iron before it was called iron ore. Well, he came in and said, well, 59%, is that iron ore? And the Chinese said, yeah, we'll buy it. So that's the basis of totally changing the perception. So I recognise that Anglo is going to spend a lot of money in UK to put a 23-mile tunnel to get their MOP or silvate to the coast. And BHP is going to spend a couple of more billion in Saskatchewan. I think the SOPs, and I'm going to say boys and girls, are going to have a very interesting time in the market. And so the tyranny of distance is, we're used to it. So tracking SOP 1,000 kilometres in a road train, it's easily done. Sorry.
But Chris, yours is MOP and it's in Europe. And yours, as I said right at the start, it's Western Europe's, it's a very large resource, isn't it? So going back to what I asked Karen, is your product going to be for supply within Europe, or are you looking globally with your supply?
Well, both, actually. First of all, we have an inferred resource of 5.3 billion tonnes, potentially more if we did more drilling. But 5.3 billion, coincidentally, the same size as Jansen measured and indicated resource of 5.3 billion. We expect to progressively convert those resources to the measured and indicated status. And because they were drilled out before extensively by the former East German state mining company, we need to only drill two or three holes in each of our license areas in order to elevate the resources to the M&I status. So over the next few years, this is what we hope to do. We are spearheading one of our licensed areas, Ongeberger, this year. We're drilling two holes there, and early next year we'll release a scoping study on Ongeberger. We've already conducted scoping studies and got very exciting results. However, the ASX will not allow us to publish the results of economic studies on the back of inferred resources. We have to have indicated resources in order to do that. So we haven't really been able to completely unveil the value of these resources until we reach the indicated status. We have mostly sylvanite and a large amount of carnalite or carnalitite in our resources. However, You may have noticed about a year ago, we announced in one area a 72 million tonne resource of kieserite, which is a sulfate of magnesium mineral. This is mined extensively by Kalian Salts in Germany, and they combine potash or KCl with magnesium sulfate to produce SLP. So the Kalian Salts already produce a range of premium products, MOP with magnesium, which is important in Europe and North America. There's quite a significant magnesium deficiency in grasses, example, for cattle. And also various SOP type mixtures, corn collie and kynet and various other things like that. So we would be producing mostly MOP, but we will have the ability to produce SOP and a range of high quality products as well, high value products. So we're quite excited by that prospect. And ultimately, because we're shallower than Jansen, we would be aiming to actually establish a mineable resource which would be equal in size or close to equal in size to the Jansen project. So we've captured the cream of the former East German potash assets, bearing in mind they used to export about 4 million tonnes of potash per annum. And I think ultimately we can get up to the same levels over the next 10 years or more.
But Chris, are you going to do it by solution mining or physical underground mining?
Physical underground mining. The material is competent. There used to be at least five major mines in that region. They were all closed down in the late 1980s, early 1990s, following German reunification. They mined at depths from 450 to about 700 meters below surface, and they were all room and pillar type mines. Australian coal mining companies will recognize the technique that we would use. We would simply mine using room and pillar with continuous miners, shuttle cars, conveyor trains.
That's where I started in my career in coal mining, underground coal mining. So I can picture it exactly.
I'm sure you do, the processing would be hot leaching. The material would be brought to surface, crushed to about 5 millimetres, and then introduced to hot brine, hot sodium chloride saturated brine. Most of the sodium chloride would then remain in solution because the liquid is saturated with respect to sodium chloride. The KCl would dissolve, and then we would go through a train of crystallizers in order to yield the final product, which could be either K60 or K62, depending on how you drive the crystallizers. And we can supply the industrial markets as well as the agricultural markets. The final question was, would we be supplying only Europe or elsewhere? As a North American, a North European producer, you have to supply export market as well as European market. Okay. And the reason for that is you only sell adequate volumes of potash in spring, and there's a little aftermarket in autumn. But in order to maintain sales levels pretty level throughout the year, you have to export during the winter months to the southern hemisphere, and most producers target Brazil. So likely we would set off a few Panamax vessels down to Brazil during the winter, and then focus on the European market in the spring through to autumn.
Thanks, Chris. Karen, where are you at with your project in Western Australia? How big is your project and where are you going to be supplying? Yeah, well, you mentioned before Australia, which I love to hear.
It's all happened almost quite quickly, really, at Lake Throssell. We announced the maiden resource for the project, so the discovery resource in May. We were straight out there pump testing, because what we're looking for is the minerals in the brine water. So pump testing to take that up to indicated status, and we've done that. So we announced that in July. And the next step for us is that scoping study. So that JORC compliant, ASX compliant scoping study that really shows just what we're looking at out there. We have some 14.3 million tonnes of sulphate of potash, and that's on the first drilling program. So we've got more tenure to go. So our stories, we anticipate, will get bigger than what we're talking about in the scoping study. And that puts us well amongst the peers that already have projects under construction. So we're looking at everything now from a development perspective. We've done the discovery, the exploration, and it's now driving through. As a mining engineer, that this is the fun stuff. We start talking about how it's going to look, how we're going to build it, what it's going to cost, and making sure that we're learning all the lessons. That's particularly important to me, is that we're looking at a really like multi-decade projects in sulphate of potash. So what we're doing now has such an impact in 10, 20 years' time that we need to make sure that we're doing it all right. So very much learning the lessons of the peers that are going ahead of us and bringing on board the right people that are going to really understand the chemistry, hence appointing our chief operating officer even before we have a scoping study, so that we've got that very early impact from his chemistry background and experience with one of the peers in sulphate of potash as well. So it's all coming together, and we're anticipating having that announced in the next month.
Well, you certainly haven't let I was going to say the grass grow under your feet, but it's probably the salt grow under your feet. Getting on with it very fast. But Karen, I will come back to you and Chris in a minute. Colin, I just wanted to briefly ask you about the Chatham Rock Phosphate Project, because you're the Executive Director of Marketing. What is it? I don't know enough about it.
Okay. Well, what recently happened, we merged two companies, my company, Avenir and Makatea. We have a phosphate project in French Polynesia. It's the rehabilitation of an old island, and the intention is to produce about 200,000 tonnes a year of organic, which means very low cadmium. We'll go into the organic farming market in the US and Canada primarily. We're also looking at the prime, which is really where the name came from, Chatham Rise, where there is an undersea, a huge deposit of undersea phosphorite. So those were the two projects we brought the companies together. And Chatham Rock Phosphate is a public company. But what we've done is really used all the knowledge that I've gained over the last few years to have a look at some other projects. And we've announced that we are looking at projects in the Northern Territory and Queensland, and recently one in Canada as well. So we expect in the near future to announce a near-term purchase of a phosphate project where we can start putting some tonnes and specifically into the Australian market. So that's we are in the market for low cadmium, that's phosphate. And in fact, we are in the process of joining a quite select group called Safer Phosphates, and that's the low cadmium group. So we're very interested with our projects to actually look at combining to make fertilisers in Australia with a combination of low cadmium phosphate, but also look at some SOP as well. So I'll be having a talk to Karen soon about, I'll send a truck over with phosphate going one way and bring back some SOP the other. And we certainly reckon, us in Australia, that once you put something on a truck, if it's going to go 500 kilometres, might as well go 1,000. It doesn't take much longer. And if you've got a road train, it might be a big country, but a lot of the work that's been done with the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility and funding through that is really helping to get projects up and provide better infrastructure for movement. So I look forward to...
But sorry to interrupt you, Colin, Chatham Rock Phosphate is not listed on the ASX.
It's not on the ASX. It's listed on the TSX and the New Zealand Stock Exchange.
and the New Zealand Stock Exchange. Now, listen, everybody, this is an investor audience out there. We've talked about the market. We've talked about your projects. What I want to do is finish up now. I'm going to give each of you a two-minute pitch to our investor audience about your company, because I love, look, everybody around the world needs to eat. We do need potash to help our miners, our farmers, to create the food supply. So it's clearly an area which is very, very important to the food supply chain. So let's start with you, Colin. Why should investors be looking at Chatham Rock Phosphate?
Well, the growing area for food production is organic, and the ability to find low cadmium phosphate is very limited, and that's the area that we have focused on. And there's a very significant thing too, that the selling price for phosphate to that market is multiples of the standard coming out of normal production. So we've got some exciting things happening and some new announcements. Just have a look at our for New Zealand it's CRP, and on the Toronto Stock Exchange it's NZP.
NZP. Good on you, Colin. I'll come back to you for a final comment. Chris, we seem to have lost Karen, so I'm going to come to you. Why should investors be looking at South Hart's potash at the moment and the code?
Okay, the code is SHP on ASX. Why investors should be looking at us? Because we've got a huge deposit of potash and potentially value-add products right in the heart of Europe. So we can supply European demand quickly and with low carbon associated with the deliveries because of the low transportation distances and also low infrastructure cost. We've got massive resources. We've been talking this morning about 14 million tons SOP, this type of thing. We've got about 600 million tons in the heart of Europe. We're going to be around for a long time with multiple mines. The European market is growing, albeit slowly. It's currently about 5.5 million tons. However, the number of producers in Europe is declining, and Calian Salts will be closing one or two large mines in the next 8 to 10 years. And at the moment, the European producers are coming up with about 3 million tons per annum. So there is a gap, and Europe is already a net importer of potash. We're a small, lean and mean company. We have got significant potash experience already on the board. We are migrating slowly but surely to Europe. We've got four of our six directors based in Europe. We're going to really progressively unveil the value of our fantastic resources, together with fast-tracking a single mine construction in the near term, hopefully followed by other mine constructions. So it's very exciting to be building this company in the heart of Europe, and we look forward to an exciting future.
Well, I think I'm going to leave the last comment to you, Colin, as the managing editor of the Australian Potash and Phosphate Report. As an investor, as a sector, do you see that this is a sector which will continue to grow and ultimately for investors a good place to find returns?
Well, as I've been following phosphate for more than 12 years and potash, and specifically in Australia, the Australian potash industry has gone from strength to strength in terms of its application to the duty. I listened today to Chris and to Karen, but I think there's an ability to gain market share and actually introduce a lower carbon SOP and one that's less destructive to the. So I think if you're going to look at start to look at ethical investment, and you know, And what does most of the work in Australia for the SOP? The sun. So I think, you know, it's solar energy at work. It just happens to be in the middle of the summer. So, but the one thing people should always remember, it does rain as well. So there's a great Japanese story about the song of the salt maker, and he was always looking at the sky, hoping it didn't rain. So that's the story for the Australian producers as well. They need the rain, geologically, to have created the brine.
Yep.
But they don't need it when they're harvesting. So, but I think there's just think of it's sunlight in chemical form.
Sunlight in chemical form.
I used to say coal was just solid solar solid carbon solid solar energy, but I think we can say that SOP is the sun at work.
SOP, MOP, it's all feeding the future of the world, which is so important. Dr. Chris Gilchrist from South House Potash, thank you so much for joining us today. Colin Randall, thank you from the managing editor. Oh, hang on a second. I think we've got Karen back again because she dropped out briefly there. So I guess the last word is going to be Karen, if we can get her back in. You know what it's like, ladies and gentlemen. It's called technology. She popped out again. You get the last word, Karen Patterson, because you popped off there for a moment, but you're back. You get the last word as to why investors should take a look at Trig Mining right now.
I'm very sorry for disappearing, but I am back. Trig Mining, we are all about.
Oh,
company with an Australian project, and you know, we've discovered this large resource there at Lake Throstle, and I can't wait to share the details with the market on what that scoping study looks like. So the first big milestone coming up for us is a scoping study. But investors, if you haven't heard about Trig before, take a look. We've got 3,500 square kilometres of projects targeting sulphate of potash in Western Australia. Lake Throstle sits on the Great Central Road, which the Australian government, the state government's bitumising. So we'll have a highway. So Colin can send the trucks down past us into Western Australia from Northern Territory, which is a really fantastic opportunity for our project. And we are anticipating a multi-decade project. Yeah. And we only listed not yet 2 years ago. So this is all quite, when the new kids on the block in sulphate and potash and pretty new kids on the ASX. And we really are building up a really exciting story there.
I love the passion and enthusiasm from all three of you. And I so appreciate your time here on the Small Caps Roundtable today. To Colin, to Chris and to Karen, thank you so much for joining us at the Potash Roundtable.
Thanks, Kerry. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you, Karen.